Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and there's a new writer's style guide out for the internet era. Let's just say the BuzzFeed style guide is not exactly the same as the old AP style guide. Epic fails are commonplace, and goats, do you know what a goat is? Are a dime a dozen. The official Twitter account of Ukraine responded to the worst cyber attack in the country's history with a GIF. In 2015, the Oxford Dictionaries declared that the word of the year was the face with tears of joy emoji. Some might silently LOL at all this change, but many others literally can't even worry what it means for the fate of the language. To all this, my guest today says, hashtag YOLO. Emmy Favilla is the current senior commerce editor and former global copy chief at BuzzFeed. In 2014, she and her team published the BuzzFeed Style Guide, which would quickly be called the Style Guide of the Internet. In her new book, A World Without Whom, The Essential Guide to Language in the BuzzFeed Age, she discusses her rationale behind BuzzFeed's notoriously untraditional style and explains why she doesn't believe doggos and puppers herald the end. Hi, Emmy. Welcome to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thanks so much for having me.
What's a doggo and a pupper?
Doggo and a pupper are other words for dog. Did we really need more words for dog? We already have pooch.
Yeah, a lot of words for dogs, but doggos are dogs, puppers are puppies, but goats aren't goats.
Goats are greatest of all time, right?
G-O-A-T, greatest of all time.
All capitalized.
In your book, you offer a ranking of punctuation marks from worst to best. So what do you have against the apostrophe?
The apostrophe's fine. It's kind of snoozy. It doesn't have a lot of character. I've ranked the exclamation mark as number one because you can use several of them to increase the intensity of the exclamatory phrase, and you can't really do that with many other punctuation marks. Yeah, you know, the apostrophe is fine in utility, but kind of boring.
Exclamation mark can be overused.
It certainly can be. And as I mentioned in the book, you don't want to use too many of them or you might look like a very excitable ant.
What's the punctus?
The punctus. I have serious FOMO for the punctus. Reverse FOMO, that is. Yeah. The punctus was a punctuation mark used way, way, way back in the day. And it basically served to do everything that modern punctuation marks do, but all in one. So it served the purpose of both a hyphen and a comma, and it served the purpose of a period. It basically split up words, whether they were adjectives or clauses, and helped you sort of parse a sentence. And yeah, just such a simplistic, easy approach to punctuation.
And in the book, you use the punctus to put line breaks into historical context, writing that all cool trends wax and wane, then come back when we least expect it. What's the comparison with line breaks?
So basically with line breaks, we're seeing in text messages, in GChats, in any sort of direct messages where you can send messages piecemeal, we're not really using the period as often as we once were. And a lot of millennials especially, can often take the use of a period as conveying an aggressive or a formal, serious tone that isn't really intended. So instead of using any punctuation mark whatsoever, when we have a line break, we don't need to. So we're just sort of sending off messages piecemeal, and that's sort of how the punctus functioned in a way.
And listeners, we could take a few quick calls for Emmy Favilla, BuzzFeed copy chief. Her new book, A World Without Whom, The Essential Guide to Language in the BuzzFeed Age. Now, on the cover, 212-433-WNYC. If I'm going to invite calls, I should give out the phone number. 212-433-9692. Why does the word whom appear on the cover crossed out? And it looks like an E on the end of that line, or is that just a squiggle?
That's a squiggle. Yeah, that's the official proofreader's mark to signal that you want to cut a word.
So on BuzzFeed, you say for who the bell tolls?
you know what? I wouldn't be opposed to
You're
it.
You're cringing.
I wouldn't be opposed to it. As I mentioned in the book, I sort of see Hume going the way of Shant. You know, it's funny to me that we roll with the punches when it comes to other things in our world evolving, from technology to fashion to the food that we eat. But when it comes to language, you know, we see these rules that we were taught 50 years ago as immutable. And I think that the eradication of the word whom is nigh.
And maybe the eradication of the word nigh is nigh or near. But you say that it's all right for writers to make up words in certain cases, for instance, like the verb adulting.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've been using that as a verb for years now, at least on BuzzFeed, you know, posts like 32 ways to be better at adulting, things like that. And that word still doesn't appear in the dictionary. So I think that more and more people are realizing that dictionaries and style guides like the AP Style Book, Chicago Manual of Style, simply can't keep up with the change of language in real time. And I think if we all know what the word is, we can all recognize the letters and recognize the sound that they make and understand the meaning that that sound creates, then it's totally fine to go ahead and use a word that isn't in the dictionary.
Tim in Brooklyn has a suggestion for mutating the language, or at least punctuation, yet again. Hi, Tim.
Hi. So, you know, the reason everything that your guest is talking about is happening is because we got more bandwidth. We got lots more bandwidth for lots more slang, lots more colloquialisms, and that's a good thing. But what we're losing bandwidth for, because we communicate by text online, is tone. And there is a punctuation mark called the irony mark. It's a backwards question mark. You can find it in Unicode. I've got it programmed into my phone. And it denotes sarcasm or irony. And if we used it more often, I think we would get angry at each other less, because I think people mistake serious for not serious and vice versa a lot.
Tim, thank you very much. Have you ever heard of that one?
I have heard of it, but I kind of feel like the tilde, which is the tilde pair that we've been using for a couple of years now, sort of functions in the same way to denote irony or assign less weightiness to a phrase or a word. And it's definitely more recognizable. And it's just sort of something that happened organically.
Christian in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Emmy Favilla. Hi, Christian.
Hi, love your show.
Thank you.
Well, some of what you're talking about made me think about controlling a society in general. I mean, you know, you can say some people speak well or some people do not speak well. And so it makes me think of exclusion or, you know, generally just controlling people. I know it sounds a little vague, but that's my point.
Well, you're saying language is always mutating, and so it's a certain kind of, I don't know, what's the word, like nostalgic mindset to say everybody should talk the way we talked and write the way we wrote, no matter what age of people that's coming from. And then it's an interesting idea that he has, that like being prescriptive about language is a form of control.
Yeah, I do sort of agree with that. And it is a way for us to kind of judge other people and sort of say, well, you know that you're not supposed to end a sentence with a preposition, or, you know, it's a way to judge people by not adhering to all of these so-called hard and fast rules that we all learned in elementary school. And I do agree. I do think that it is sort of a way to kind of exert, you know, a sense of control and a sort of, it's pretentious.
And you allow, though, to a certain degree in the book, for a more prescriptive approach, or a prescriptive approach regarding at least inclusive language. You dedicate an entire chapter, which makes up, I think, a great deal of the BuzzFeed style guide, to what you call how to not be a jerk.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people were a little bit surprised to see that chapter was a bit more serious in tone than the rest of the book was, and I feel like that was absolutely warranted. And I think it speaks to the larger point of the book, which is that the things that we should be the most mindful of are inclusive and respectful language, and being accurate in the way that we're describing certain demographics or certain people or cultures or others whose experiences we may not be familiar with. And I think that is what we should really be paying more attention to than whether we're spelling okay as okay or okay A-Y.
Has BuzzFeed adopted any singular pronoun that's non-specific, like calling an individual they, so we don't have to call them he or she?
Yes. Yeah. We are big proponents of the singular they. The AP style book finally came around on accepting the singular epicene they earlier this year, which was a really great stride. And it's not only does it mimic the way we actually speak, because we do tend to use the pronoun they in speech when we're talking about a non-specific person, saying, for instance, if someone is going to the store, they should get blah, blah, blah. It also obviously makes room for multiple genders and people who may not adhere to the gender binary. And it's just smoother and avoids awkward, clumsy sentences. And we should all be using it more.
And when do you approve of emojis, or how do you say that they should be used? Because they're not actually words or punctuation. They're little illustrations.
Right. You know what? I'm not here to tell anyone how and when they should use emojis. I think they should follow their heart and use them when they feel like it adds, it helps to add a nuanced, you know, it helps to add nuances to whatever they're trying to say, the great thing about emojis is that they help us to create tone in an otherwise toneless sentence. And I think that is really great, and it's something to be celebrated. And I think if you have a sentence that you're sending, whether it's in a direct message or a text or whatever, and it could be misread, add an emoji that can elucidate what the intended tone of that is, and easy breezy, there you go.
We're just about out of time. There's so much more we could talk about. The overuse to the point of devaluation of epic and literally, or the expansion of woke from a specific Black Lives Matter racial injustice thing to anybody becoming more aware of something. But I'll just ask you one quick out the door question. How much of the BuzzFeed style guide would you say has been kind of determined by Twitter? Because in the last decade, so much has kind of been redone to fit into 140 characters and still communicate.
Oh God, so much of the BuzzFeed style guide has been revised and added because of Twitter. And we also use, when I was copy chief, we would use our BuzzFeed style Twitter account to ask users, how they felt a certain word should be styled. And it's such a great resource for polling and for seeing what, you know, the prevailing style for certain phrases or words are. And it's just such an amazing resource that we have now.
So let's keep talking as the language continues to evolve and become more fun and more, expressive for today, rather than falling back on the rules of yesterday that we have to follow. Emily Favilla is BuzzFeed's copy chief and is now the author of A World Without Whom, The Essential Guide to Language in the BuzzFeed Age. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.